If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Well, we should have called that segment Sugar and Controlling Your Genes, because sugar, high sugar, turns your genes, turns genes that are bad for you on, and normal sugar keeps those genes, that is, your healthy genes, functioning well. So that's the segment, and in fact, the tip of the day, at the end of the day, is going, at the end of this hour, is going to be the bedroom habit that's good for your blood sugar. The bedroom habit that's good for your blood sugar. Coming up at 1:30, the best expert that I know of on fibromyalgia and fatigue. He's written the book called The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution, but he's also a great personal doc. I know that because of the care he's given some of the people I've referred to him. Unfortunately, he lives in Hawaii, but he's got a website, endfatigue.com, where you can find docs all over the country. But it's Jacob Teitelbaum. Jacob Teitelbaum is just the nicest guy and the world's expert, written a great book, The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution. You know, one of the things that is popular that we heard about this week is gluten-free diets. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but we're also going to talk about George W. Stent. But first, gluten-free diets. What happened this week on gluten-free diets, Bridget?
Well, it was actually last Friday that the FDA released, well, technically the USDA, they released the final standards on defining gluten-free on food product labels. And a lot of people praised this, this finalized guide that has been released, but at the same time, there was also a lot of people that pointed out that it took the FDA about 9 years to release and come up with the new standards in order to protect all of the Americans that suffer from celiac disease, because the United States is actually far behind Canada and the EU, who came up with their own guidelines a few years ago.
So now we have guidelines for trans fat. We have guidelines where it says low sodium and low fat. What's the guideline for gluten-free? How little gluten can there be and it still be considered, or how much gluten can there be and it still be considered gluten-free?
Okay, that, and I just also want to point out that there also are guidelines for a lot of other allergens, or food allergens, like milk, eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, soy, and wheat. They've all been in effect since 2006. So this is the first time that they've released standards for gluten-free. It's like the last major allergen that hasn't been addressed yet by the FDA. So basically, gluten is found in wheat, barley, and rye. And the difference between wheat, which already has standards that have been in effect since 2006, and gluten, is that gluten is also found in barley and rye. So anything that is wheat-free, anything that is gluten-free is wheat-free, but anything that is wheat-free is not necessarily gluten-free. Are you with me?
Yes, but anyway, so gluten is in wheat, barley, and rye, and it's less than one what? Of a millionth of a percent? What's the percentage that it can have of gluten in it and still be considered gluten-free?
20 parts per million.
So 20 parts per million, that's smaller than I can measure. But in any case, that's the standard. And when we talk about this, we'll say that gluten diets and gluten-free diets, that is, haven't been shown to cause weight loss. And
right.
Really are just for people who have celiac disease or severe gluten allergies or intolerances. And we're going to do
right.
a special segment on that when you come back. Maybe even next week we'll do that, Bridget.
Yeah, that would be so fun.
Because you're an expert on that. Let me talk about George W.'s arteries, if you will. George W. had a stent, we learned, on Tuesday morning, or maybe even more than one, to open up one of his coronary arteries. Well, first, was the stress test appropriate, and was the stent needed? or could food choices have changed the need? Well, George W., let me go back and say, first of all, the docs who did it from the Cooper Center, and Ken Cooper takes care of him, is a good friend, really is a very solid and excellent executive health physician, so he joins that group. But George W. isn't the first president with arteries that show aging and plaque. Obviously, Bill Clinton's did. That's why he got stents and bypass. So did Reagan's and Ike's and Harrison's and Roosevelt's times, too. And maybe every president ages. And if you look at Obama's hair or Bill C's heart arteries before he radically changed his diet and stress levels, or you can look at Ike or Harrison's or choose any president, it's a job laden with aging stress. In fact, when about 10 years ago, we measured the real age of each of the presidents when they took office and when they left office from publicly available data, because a lot of the data now on their medical tests is publicly available, so we did that. Anyone can do the real age program. It's at sharecare.com if you want to do it for yourself. The presidents aged almost invariably 2 years for every year they were in office. And the good news is, like Clinton, they can change their diets and stress management after they leave office and get younger. And in fact, one of the things that happened between the 50s and now is they changed the medical management, so they're much less likely to have untreated hypertension. The Roosevelts had untreated hypertension, so did Harrison, because we didn't have treatments for it. Now they get treatment for it, but they still age that, because the addition now is that 24x7 cable news cycle. So Bill Clinton has obviously gone on, he's publicly said he's gone on the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute's Dr. Esselstyn, that's Esselstyn diet, which in the book is Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, and is reversing that. And my guess is that George W. got the stent because he really was symptomatic, although they said he wasn't. And we know that the presidents have constant stress. Stress ages you the most of anything. The good news is you can manage the stress by managing your handling of it. And that's what we've got to teach the presidents to do. That's the lesson for all the rest of us. That is, for the rest of us, the lesson from George W.'s arteries being stented is, it's not good enough to know how to practice stress management. You've got to do it every day. And it's pretty easy. You can go, if you don't know how to do it, you can go to Stress Free Now. You can go to the Cleveland Clinic Wellness.com. Look for the Stress Free Now program, or even some of the free meditations, and they teach you how to do it. It isn't just good enough to have the right blood pressure medicines or the right cholesterol medicines or the right blood pressure, et cetera. I'm sure that Cooper had him on medications or whatever was needed to get those, and George W. ate a pretty good diet, and I know he was active exerciser. I think what he didn't do is what most of us fail. The one thing most of us fail in doing is managing the invariable stress of life.
Well, now, and I have, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I read someone tweeted at you this past week and said, when you tweeted something about stress management, and said, what happens when you can't control having a lot of stress in your life? And I know that you have a response to that.
So you never will be able to control all the stress in your life, but what you've got to do is control your response to it. When we come back, the great, and I say that underestimating, Jacob Teitelbaum, talking about the fatigue and fibromyalgia solution, we'll also hopefully get, if not this hour, sometime in a show, we'll get to talk about Gupta's change on medical marijuana and why I say don't smoke. One cigarette, one joint, is 4 cigarettes worth of aging to your lungs and to those around you. So take it in a pill or brownie form. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, Radio MD. Stay well.